Well, good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting today on March 15th, 2020. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded and we do place the meeting audio on our website for all the meetings. Just a few helpful tips. Everyone joining via phone calls, you can press *6 and or unmute yourself. If you'd like to make some comments, bend or lower your virtual hands by pressing *9. Everyone joining via video conference, you can press click on the speaker icon. That will mute and or unmute your voice, and you can click on the hand icon to raise your virtual hands. We do have interpreters on the call with us, so please state your name first before you make your comments. This helps them do their job well. It also helps everyone listening on the phone calls knowing who is the speaker. It definitely helps everyone listening to the audience knowing who was the speaker at the time. anybody looking to make public comments, please let me know now so that I can put you on the list for public comments section. You can also send me a message on the chat so that I can put you on the list. I would at this time go ahead and take for the AAC meetings. Please do confirm. Elver Ariza. Darnese Bush. Dino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. I know that she's on the call with us. Deborah Fisher.
I'm here.
Eleni Jackson. Eve Kaplan. Mary Kay McMahon. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Anthony Oberg. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Chris Ray. Denise Rush. I believe Ms. Rush is on the call with us. Paul Semaphore.
Here.
Patrick Sheehan.
Denise Rush is here.
Thank you, Ms. Rush. And Kelly Simon. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's committee meeting for today. At this point, I would share my screen and I would show the agenda for today's meeting and I would also read it out loud. Bear with me for a quick moment so that I can share my screen. We just went through the roll call for today's meeting. At 4:05, we will review the agenda and meeting minutes from last month's meeting. At 4:10, we have customer service and outreach reports. At 4:15, we will have the Michael Wilson Award and Rush Award, if any. At 4:20, we will have OCC staff to provide information about Metro Access ride calculation. At 4:40, Mr. Blake will give us information about Metro Access next generation van technical specifications. At 5 p.m., Ms. Williams-Hall will give us an update about COVID-related safety cleaning issues. At 5:10, Mr. David Schaefer will give us an update about web booking password change. At 5:20 p.m., Mr. Blake will give us an update about the Office of Inspector General's special report on Metro Access. At 5:35 p.m., we will begin the public comment section. At 6 p.m., the meeting will adjourn. At this point, I will stop sharing my screen. That was the agenda for today's meeting. At this time, I would ask Chair Semaphore to move the meeting forward. Chair Semaphore, do you have the floor?
Thank you. So the first thing we're going to do is review the agenda here. And are there any changes in any additions to this fully packed agenda? Are any committee members? Hearing none, I will need someone to help move and second this agenda as is.
So moved.
And second?
Second.
Thank you, Phil. All those in favor of moving the agenda as is, please do so by saying aye.
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 Nays, abstentions. The motion carries to move the agenda as is. Next is the minutes from the prior meeting from the month of February. Are there any additions, changes, amendments, things that need to be done to this meeting? Minutes from February from the subcommittee? Hearing the crickets, can I get someone to put a motion to adopt the minutes from February 2021 as is from Metro Access Subcommittee meeting?
So moved.
So moved.
And can I get a second?
Second, Philippa.
Thank you. All those in favor of adopting the minutes as is from the prior Metro Access Subcommittee meeting in February of 2021, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nays, abstentions, the motion carries to adopt the minutes from February 2021 as is. Next, we will have customer service and outreach reports. Ms. Anderson and her team.
Afternoon, excuse me. Hope everyone's well. Again, this is Allison Anderson. At this time, I'd like to have Kay Clark with MTM provide us with the public comment report from our last session, as well as some other commendation stats.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Good afternoon, everyone. We do have two comments from the February meeting pertaining to Metro Access, and they are as follows. The first, a customer reported that a young lady she knows had issue with an operator who was scheduled for a dialysis trip. She stated the operator refused to take the customer down the ramp at her home because it did not appear to be stable. She also stated the operator did not communicate with the customer and left. Mr. Blake informed the customer that he would need the customer's information to point to a proper investigation performed. He also provided his phone number for a point of contact. And the second, the AAC member reported that her Metro Access eligibility has expired and she did not have a new form. Mr. Antoine Johnson from the Eligibility Operations informed the AAC member that all customers are receiving a 60-day auto renewal until the pandemic ends. In addition to the comment report, we would like to recognize each company on the commendations received for their staff's appreciated customer service during the month of February. For Diamond Transportation, we had 49 commendations. Transdev had 30. First Transit had 23. MV also had 23, and Challenger had 22, to total 147 for the month of February. And thank you, that's my report for the day.
Excuse me, this is Phil Posner. Is there any follow-up on the young lady with the ramp?
Let's see.
Yes, oh, sorry, I was trying to get off of mute. So without getting into too many details, the situation was, this was not a ramp that was installed at the home. This was a ramp purchase that you would use, let's say, in the example I gave to the customer who made the report, and we talked about it afterwards, and I even shared photos with her. I wouldn't share photos, you know, general public, but she was intimately involved in the situation. But this is the type of ramp you would use if you were moving furniture or moving something, you know, a refrigerator in and out of a home. You place it at the top of the steps and you're very careful, but this isn't a wheelchair ramp. So the driver was actually correct in this case. We have been providing service for the customer, but the customer has been required to receive support from family members or friends to help her off the steps. And I even advised the customer when I spoke to her directly, and I'm not the person who was at the AEC meeting, but the actual Metro Access customer in question here, I highly recommended that she not use that ramp at all because it was extremely dangerous. It could tip over if there was not a balance at the other end. But you know, it's up to her to use the ramp that they've purchased for her, but that was not a wheelchair accessible ramp that was being used. And at the time of the report during the meeting, the very well-intentioned member of the public was not aware of the type of ramp it was until I shared pictures with her that I received in the course of the investigation.
If customer does get some follow-up, depending on what county they live in, a number of the counties in Virginia require accessible ramps be installed by the rental property where they're renting their apartment if she doesn't own the house. If she's a renter, the landlord is required to put in an accessible ADA qualified ramp for her.
In this particular case, this is a private home.
Thank you. That's unfortunate.
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. So next we have outreach reports.
Okay, sorry about that. I was trying to get off on mute. We do not have any outreach to report at this time.
Thank you. Next is going to be the Michael Wilson Award and Rush Award. I'm going to presume for Ms. Rush there, we are putting a pause on Rush awardees until we at some point in the future are able to congregate safely in person. If I'm correct, and then now we're going to move into Michael Wilson Awards.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Semaphore. So at this time, I'd like to present Mr. Pierre Montebaro with Challenger Transportation for this afternoon's Michael Wilson Award recipient.
Good afternoon, everyone. We have chosen one of our driver. His name is Freddy Orantes. And Freddy has been with the company for almost 2 years. And I mean, you have to see Freddy to understand what I mean. Freddy comes in the morning with a smile on his face. And when he leaves, he's still smiling. I don't know if he ever been mad or not, but he's really a pleasant person to be around. I mean, he's really nice all the time. All my staff love him. The customer, he doesn't have any complaint as far as being rude or, in sudden nature. So he's really a great person. He has many commendations that he receives from our customer. So we decided to go with him. He should be with us, I hope so.
Yes, I do see him.
Okay, so, but on personal notes, if I can just say, something, Freddie has been married for 44 years. So I'm following his footstep, by the way. I'm just kidding. So he's been married for 44 years. He had 3 kids and 8 grandkids. He loved to spend time with his family, watch TV, movies, soccer, and so on. So I don't know if he has something to say. I'll let him speak for himself. Freddie?
Thank you for this opportunity. I want to say thank you to Metro Access and Challenger to the opportunity to work with the company, because I really appreciate everything the company, especially Challenger, do for me. When I ask for something, they always is available. Thank you for everything. I'm trying to do the best I can for all customers all the time. Thank you. I'm very well.
Thank you, Freddie. And we have a little small thing for you. Probably we will present when we see you. I mean, tomorrow, after tomorrow.
After tomorrow. Tomorrow is my day off.
All right. So you rest well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pierre, and congratulations to Freddie.
Thank you.
To your Michael Wilson Award for this month. Next, we have the Metro Access ride calculation. I guess who on OOC, at the OCC staff here is going to be doing this presentation?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, we're going to have Mr. David Seatentoff from he's the head of information technology, including scheduling and software support for MV, who, as you know, is the Metro Access Operations Control Center contracting company. So you're going to be hearing directly from the head of the team that puts the schedules together and manages the information technology support for all of Metro Access. So is Mr. Seatentoff online?
Yeah, I haven't seen or heard from him in ages. Hello, sir.
Hello, Paul. How are you doing today?
Good.
Good. So first, from a logistics point of view, I need someone to enable my screen sharing because it's disabled.
I will do that. I would also request that if you would, please describe your presentation, because you have members who may be blind or have low vision, so that will help them.
I will definitely do that.
We'll share your screen at this point.
So good morning, good morning, God, I'm a few hours behind, so bear with me. So today's presentation is on Metro Access ride calculations. We're gonna be talking about fixed route equivalency as well as the actual fare calculations. Can everybody see the presentation?
Yes.
Yes.
Great. So first, as we talked about, we're gonna talk about fixed route equivalency. Okay, well, MATA's criteria is evaluating utilizing the Automatic Terminal Information Service, ATIS, which basically provides us the fixed route and rail segment information for times, you know, that we need. The times for travel include walking time to and from a bus stop, as well as to and from the bus stops to your destination for metro stations. It includes the fixed route bus scheduled times, travel times, as well as the rail segment travel times and connection times to all of those. When we look about what ATIS returns, it goes out and it says, okay, I'm leaving from my house, I'm going here. So it says, okay, the nearest bus stop's here. It's gonna take me to the metro station, to the destination I'm going metro, and then I'm gonna walk or take a bus or whatever to my final destination. When you look at what happens is, it comes out and ATIS says, okay, well, the fastest route there would be 34 minutes. And that's on this exact screen that I'm showing is talking about JGB to OCC, you know, so in Hyattsville, just kind of a generic trip, just to give you an example. And it's the quickest route for this is actually leaving at 7:20 in the morning, taking the yellow route and then walking to the OCC because it's right across the street. And that returns a minute, 34 minutes. Now there's other times it could be available, you know, 39 minutes, 35, 50 minutes. But again, ATIS is gonna return the fastest travel time that could be made to that destination, you know, to get you when you wanted to be there. In this case, 8 o'clock is what I used. So when we look about fixed route equivalency for statistical purposes, you know, is it compliant? Is it not compliant? What the system does is it grabs the fixed route data and says, okay, it can be done. It should be done with so much time on board, as the previous screen said, 34 minutes. If it is not within the service area, it's outside the service area, then there is no comparable fixed route data to actually compare it to. So for a statistical purpose, it's actually considered compliant, because it's not there, it is within ADA because it's not ADA applicable. You know, And this is based on historic ADIS tables, which I'm going to explain in a few minutes. Okay. Even though it's considered compliant, it's, you know, it's important to understand that, you know, there's still an onboard table that's used within Trapeze. Okay. And even though it's not in the service area, right, as far as ADA, we still look at that and say, okay, well, did it exceed what we said it should have been? Because if it did, then we also have an issue there and it's not considered compliant. So when we talk about the historic tables, it's important to understand the ADA service that we provide service to is based on the map within Trapeze. Okay, and that's done because we've actually only increased the area. We've never decreased it. So for example, when Fixed Route reduces their routes, we keep ours the same. If they extend a route or add a route, we actually extend our service hour service area to incorporate that same area, you know, to where you're always getting the service that you would be getting available on Fixed Route, you know, as a minimum. When we talk about the ADIS data, because their systems changed, for example, Fixed Route, we did their reduction back in 2019, which is, you know, if you can remember, was a pretty significant reduction. Okay. At that time, the managing director, Mr. Blake, said, we're not going to do that. We're going to leave our area the same, right? When we did that, we had to capture that route data that existed at that time in order to make sure the system would work and not curtail trips, you know, that would have been curtailed had we moved to the other map. So again, when we look at how it's done, you know, you put in your request for your pickup time, okay, and now we're talking fare calculations. It goes out to ADIS, the information system, and says, okay, he's requesting 8 o'clock. It's gonna check 15 minutes before and 15 minutes after to basically return the lowest possible fare. So if you're right before the peak hour or right after the peak hour, if your time would, you know, based on that 15 minutes would fall into a non-peak, you're going to get the lower fare, you know, than the peak fare. Okay. And again, the maximum fare is still $6.50. So the data does not change to reflect current WMATA services as far as times, because we wanted to ensure that the system did not curtail the available trips to our access customers. Okay. Again, the service area is not changed for any riders because of that. Okay. Fares are not increased, you know, due to service reduction, i.e., you know, not being in the service area anymore. And it is independent of temporary policies such as, you know, COVID route service reductions, hours and routes, like when they stopped running service at 9 o'clock at night, we still continued to run to the wee hours of the morning. So I wanted to make sure, you know, everyone was aware of that. That's kind of the quick and it's kind of down and dirty, but it's really the crux of how FRE is determined and the fares are calculated. Is there any questions?
So, I'm going to rely on you. Who has their hands up? Because I'm sure their hands, we're going to do committee members first and then members from the public if there are any particular questions as it pertains to this specific topic only. Are there any questions from any committee members?
Paul, please
yes.
Put my hand up.
All right.
Dr. Posner, bear with me for one quick second. This is, I apologize, but because the screen is still being shared, I'm not able to see the hands up.
Sorry, give me one second. I will.
You can share
your
screen.
No worries, take your time.
Actually, I'm the only one with his hand up right now.
Thank you.
All right. Now, before you speak, Phil, are there any other hands in new?
I don't see any others.
Okay, moment. Go ahead.
With all of the construction work that's going on in rail and the modifications that have been made in the bus routes, how frequently is the ATIS information updated as to which buses are available and what the schedule is? And the same goes for the rail stations that are available and their schedule.
So right now they're actually updated quarterly, but if there's a significant change that happens in between, which we just did an upgrade, extension of the service area, because they added routes in the outreach of
Prince George's County.
Prince George's County. So we just finished doing an upgrade a month earlier than planned because they added some routes. And we wanted to make sure we captured that within the service area.
Thank you. You're going to have the Blue Line station shut down. That going to take place shortly.
So if it's a shutdown, again, we will not reduce the service map based on the directions Mr. Blake has given. So it wouldn't have any impact on the service area.
But what does it do to the fare calculation if there are no trains? Do you use bus calculation?
Same process. It's using historical data. So it would actually, even though there's no train, our ADIS system would not know that. So it would actually still give you the fastest, best fare.
It's inaccurate then.
Correct.
Because keep in mind, Phil, and then we talked about this last summer, the trips from the rail station are not final trips per se. These are trips that are shuttle service to the next rail station. So if a person is at, I'm just picking a station, Navy Yard, and Navy Yard is shut down, the shuttle that they're going to pick up isn't to go from Navy Yard to their final destination as a bus trip. The shuttle they're going to pick up is to the next rail station. So the rail station would still be a fare that would be calculated for the Metro Access customer.
But if there is a parallel bus route, that bus route is going to be faster than having to switch over to a shuttle and then switch back to the rail to get where they're going. So it should still be a bus calculation.
I don't know if it's that clear and direct in terms of which one is the fastest, but let's talk about it. Let's do some more research and I will follow up, or David will follow up with the committee on that. I think that's a fair question and you should see the data, but yeah, I'm not sure just right offhand. I'll defer to you at this moment, but we'll come back with specific outlook.
Thank you. No, I'm thinking basically again where I am in Virginia, where I've got a bus on the corner that will take me into Farragut Square. Or I could take the train, which is much faster, which I usually do. But when they shut down my station, I take the bus completely. I don't go shuttle to get the train and then come over. So that's the situation. Then I'm sure in certain other areas that may be the case. So looking into it would be really useful, I think, because there is a big difference in fare.
Mm-hmm.
There is. We'll check it out.
And the fact that y'all calculate now historical data versus what other factors going on, we did not know. So this is useful information to have that does take precedence over maybe something that is temporarily going on for a period of time. Agreed. In terms of factoring fares.
We'll look at that, yes.
Are there any other questions as it relates to this topic from committee members?
Chair Summerford, this is Anu. I do not see any other hands up from the committee members.
Or the public?
Yes, we do have a member of the public, Ansel Torres.
Okay, I will let Ansel speak. Ansel, just make sure it is related to this topic, please. Go ahead, speak. You can unmute him, or you can unmute yourself, Mr. Torres. Mr. Torres?
He's still on mute. He has to unmute. Can you unmute him? There it is. Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead, Mr. Torres.
Yes, my question has to do with the calculation of the fare. I have a situation where a trip from my home to destination in PG County during rush hour was calculated at $4 in the morning during rush hour, as I said. At 1 o'clock in the afternoon on my return trip, it was calculated at 6:50, outside of rush hour, as far as I know. How on earth is that possible?
Well, we have to get the specific address and pickup time requests and all that, and we can probably get into it. Just on the surface, it appears that the morning trip is being calculated as bus only, where the afternoon trip is including rail service involved. I mean, that's just hearing the numbers.
Well,
but if you share with us the specific time, the day of the week, that will be able to, that's the information. No matter what we say tonight, it will be speculative. We would need the specific date and time to then go and look at why would the system consider a rush hour trip for only bus, but a return trip for rail.
Well, I had you, I actually contacted you about this issue more than a year ago. And
when you say you say Chris, or you mean Metro?
You specifically. Okay. And you had someone contact me to explain this to me. Mm-hmm. And the good lady spent about 20 to 30 minutes on the phone trying to explain this to me. And it got so convoluted that I was like, I don't think we're going to get anywhere, because it was something about, well, at the time there was some service being done on the train, or the train was out of service, or some manner of issue like that, why it was calculated one way and not the other way. Mm-hmm. Well, about 2 weeks ago, I was like, okay, well, I'm assuming by this time, if the train was out of service, it would be in service now. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly the same thing. So, okay. which means that this individual was trying to explain to me something that she really could not explain. And okay. I felt as though it was just pulling stuff out of thin air to give me an answer when there really was no answer.
So let's do this here. Send me the information again, because I don't recall this specific matter. But send me the information, and I'll be the one who call you back with the information. Whether I'm pulling it out of thin air or not, I'll be the one to speak with you.
Mr. Seidenthoff, I do have one final question for you and or Mr.
Blake. Well, was Mr. Torres finished?
Mr. Torres?
Yes, I'm done. I'm finished, yes.
Okay.
All right, so I do have one final question to ask you on this topic. As I last remember, in terms of fare calculation, we looked at, correct me if I'm wrong, we give, the time we want to leave and everything. We looked at the reiteration of within the half hour window, and we were sort of given the cheapest fare, like 15 minutes before and after. Is that policy still in effect?
Yes, that policy is still in effect based on the system information we have.
Okay, I just want to put that publicly out there. That's all.
Yeah, the official terminology, that's the fare calculator. So yes, we're still, and the AAC was instrumental in the development of that, or at least the idea of making it happen. So that is still, to this point, still our policy, yes.
Okay. All right, thank you so much. If there's no other questions, we're gonna move on to the next topic, since there are many. The next will be the, Mr. Blake, this is you. Next van generation technical specifications discussion. Or do I wanna do Ms. Williams Hall first and get that out of the way, since it's easier, because it's probably be more lengthy.
I'll be honest with you, Mr. Chairman. I think this one is easier, because if you remember now, I went through a document that I had previously shared with the AAC of what I call the public-facing technical specifications as a way to demonstrate to the committee members that we took your ideas and incorporated them into the original solicitation, and we'll see, what happens. The proposals are due on March 31st. We're waiting for any questions from prospective vendors. So when I saw this on the agenda, I took this as perhaps maybe a member of the committee or a member of the public may have some follow-up questions from our AAC meeting on March 1st. But if not, I think I've kind of given you the update is that We've started with the recommendations from the AAC. The proposal is public. The bids are due on March 31st. But I do see Mr. Chairman Posner's hand raise.
Okay. Phil, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's great. If I could make a suggestion, if the new for the AAC meeting minutes and for these minutes, if you just make a copy of that one page of the specifications that are online and include that in the minutes, that will make it very easy for folks to find it in one place in case they missed it, or, you know, verbal communication may not be as good as written communication. So if Anu can do that, that would be super.
We concur.
Sure, this is Anu. I can do that, Dr. Posner, and I can have it as a part of the minutes. You're asking for the AAC and the Metro Access, correct?
Yes, when Mr. Blake gave his report to AAC, when Mr. Blake gave his report here, just say, Mr. Blake gave this report, and this is the information that was in the report, and then just post that.
Sure.
All right. Is there any other questions about this topic from any committee members, or because Mr. Blake gave his report? I guess we're hearing there's none. I can move on to the next topic. So the next one is going to be Ms. Williams Hall, COVID-related cleaning issues, safety updates.
So, forgive me, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everyone. I want to make sure that I understand what's expected here with regard to this update. I can certainly provide.
One thing I saw on the vans that was updated or new in terms of the signage that y'all have is an update with the federal mandate of masks. So I saw, you know, a mask is federally mandated on all public transportation, which this applies to. So I did see that update in terms of messaging on just about all the vans. If that's something you want to speak to, that you must have a mask on, and what the, and maybe you can speak to what happens if this person does not come on with a mask, since now this is a federal mandate.
Okay, so we require the use of masks by both our riding public and by our vehicle operators. That hasn't changed. We've utilized the federal mandate as a means of strengthening that message, although we will not deny service to a customer who refuses to wear a mask. It's not designed for us to police, so we're not going to do that. If that happens, our drivers will call the OCC, report the infraction to the OCC, who will in turn notify Mr. Blake and I, and we'll contact that customer to try to find out what's behind their unwillingness to wear a mask. Is there, you know, some kind of an exception based on a medical condition? But at this time, we're not denying service because a customer refuses to wear a mask.
Okay, so you will not consider it as part of abusive behavior, anything like that?
So it depends on what, yeah. I'm sorry, Mr. Blake, go ahead.
That's why I'm asking those questions.
She's right.
Go ahead, Ms. Williams Hall. Sorry.
Oh, no. What I was saying is that it depends on what the customer provides as their justification for not wearing one. If the customer is, you know, I don't want to say anything out of turn here, but if the customer just refuses to do so because that's what the customer wants to do and there's not a justifiable reason, then there are avenues that are at our disposal where we can interrupt that customer's ability to utilize the service.
Okay. That's what I wanted to make clear for the record.
Yes.
And can you give any updates in terms, I guess, with COVID, in terms of any changes in how you clean vehicles, things like that?
Mr. Chair, this is Mary Beth Morgan. This is one of the interpreters. My apologies for interrupting, but Rico has been trying to get your attention.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not sure if you can see everybody. So I'm going to let Helen do this question, and then we're going to switch.
Okay, so go right ahead with Rico's question.
Rico is going to go ahead with this question.
Oh, okay.
And Helen's got something. She's just pulling her microphone into the right place.
And also ask him, make sure it pertains to this specific topic.
You can just speak directly to him. She's going to enter. Okay.
I'm wondering if this applies to deafblind customers as well.
Are you talking about the mask mandate? I'm sorry.
The CR1.
Yes.
Yes, I'm talking about the masks.
Yes, this applies to all of our customers.
All customers.
Yes.
So,
a CR1.
Are there any clear masks available?
Thank you, Mr. Blake.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've investigated that and we've looked into it, but at the moment, I won't say that I won't even say any driver right now is wearing a clear mask. I won't even go on the limb to say that, though there could be some. However, the communication is in terms of the customer refusing to wear a mask, the communication and discussion doesn't have to take place between the customer and the driver. The driver, as Mr. Williams Hall reported, will report the situation to the OCC.
I'm just talking about for communication purposes with the deafblind community that this needs
right. to be communicated. Right, and so what I'm trying to explain in the situation in terms of the context of what we're talking about, the communication and discussion about the refusal to wear a mask will not occur between the driver and the customer. So that communication will take place in an accessible format so that we can find out why that customer has chosen not to wear a mask when he or she is riding on Metro Access.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is Phil. This issue came up when Ms. Impostato gave her talk to the RAC last week, and I asked her about the special see-through masks for communication. And she said that WMATA would be investigating obtaining those to use them. The question I have is, for whatever reason, because there are exemptions for not wearing masks, will the vehicle be taken out of service so it can be cleaned if there is an unmasked individual using it?
The vehicles are taken out of service when there is a customer who has been confirmed or suspected of having COVID-19. An unmasked person, we're not going to, at this point, our policy is not to assume that an unmasked person or even a masked person has COVID-19. So the answer to your question roundabout way at this point in time, no. If a customer refuses to wear a mask, that vehicle is not taken out of service.
If the customer comes on coughing and sneezing and hacking and you're not doctors, you can't make a diagnosis, but one would hope, because there have been situations on the bus where the drivers have become very ill following an unmasked person breathing on them. And I don't know what the answer might be. You might talk with Ms. Impostato. The simplest thing that they do in most places is they'll do a non-touching temperature. They use a teletemperature that they just take it at the forehead. And then they ask them the three questions. Have you had a fever? Have you been out of country? Have you been exposed to people that have the degree? That's not 100%, but that's what most public places and most hospitals do before you come in. And just a thought that you might want to talk to her and see what can be done, what's affordable, and what's the safest way to handle it.
Now, are you suggesting temperature checks for every passenger or just those who are saying?
No, that's someone that's not wearing a mask.
Oh, okay. We'll take it under advisement. We'll talk to her about it. I didn't see it in that framework and in terms of the customer not wearing a mask, i.e. they may, but let us talk with the chief safety officer and see if there's a reasonableness to taking to that extent. But I'll tell you, Mr. Chairman, if a customer gets on a vehicle with or without a mask and he or she is coughing and sneezing, I assure you most certainly the driver is probably going to report that. So I don't know if that's a matter of not wearing a mask or wearing a mask, because as someone just pointed out, the FTA and the CDC have offered
exemptions to this mask mandate based on disabilities and other factors.
Yeah.
But we will speak with the we will speak with the chief safety officer to see the extent to take that next step.
Yeah, it's just a question of whether the vehicle needs to be cleaned after that person gets off, so it's not an infected vehicle, or drive around with the windows open. And you know, it's typically when I go to the hospital, all the windows are open, the roof vent is open, and I drive really hot, high speed on the interstate, and I blow out whatever air I might have picked up when I was at the hospital.
I'm with you. I'm not laughing. But I mean, I understand what you're saying.
But that's the question. But thank you.
Yes, sir.
All right. Are there any other questions that relate to this topic?
Mr. BRS Subcommittee Chair has his hand up. Yes.
Tina?
Yes.
Number four, Mr. Calabria, Mayor. This is, I know, just a friendly reminder. If everyone can state their name before making their comments, I just got a reminder from the interpreter, so they would really appreciate that. Thank you. Go ahead, Tina.
This is Tino. With respect to see-through plastic masks, they alone are not as effective as cloth masks. If see-through plastic masks are used, they should be over cloth masks because of the effectiveness of cloth masks. As a matter of fact, now people are encouraged to double mask, and that means double mask with cloth masks.
The interpreter speaking. Rico, I'm going to clarify if he's talking about a clear safety shield or the mask that were cloth with a clear piece out for the mouth. I'm going to ask just to clarify. So this is Rico. Rico was speaking about the cloth masks,
right,
that have the clear, I had one right here. I was going to show it to you, Mr. Tino, but it's a cloth mask and it just has a clearness right there. And so that was an interpretation. We just, as the interpreters, we were just making sure that that's what he meant by clear mask.
Right.
From the deaf meeting. And I just wanted to make sure that you knew that that's what he was saying. That's all. Thank you so much, Mr. Tino.
That's okay. This is Tino again. I am familiar with the mask that he's referring to. But since the recommendation now is that people double masks, I suppose if you double masked with those clear mouthpiece masks, that might be sufficient. Someone should check that out.
Okay.
We will. And also, I'm just trying to take a quick look at some of the exceptions. I'm going to look because the initial question from Rico when Ms. Williams Hall was giving the presentation is that all customers are required to wear a face mask. And that is still our position officially for all customers, regardless of disability. But I'm reading something here, but I need to, not in the middle of a meeting and a quick internet search. I need to read it and digest it, as I like to say in my meetings, pray over it. It looks like the FTA is even given an exception for deaf people from the mask itself. Now, I haven't totally interpreted it that way. I will get back to you all on that. It's not going to change our messaging, but I'm sure the deaf community, people, the stakeholders in that community, deaf hard of hearing community, would probably be aware of that and be sharing that messaging out as well. But we're going to look at that information from the FTA and make sure that what I'm reading is actually that. But I see, Tino, your hand is up again.
Yes, Mr. Blake, you are correct. Ms. Impostato did mention that at the RAC meeting. She talked about that community as well as people with respiratory diseases such as asthma and people with mental conditions that cannot be confined, that feel the system of confinement wearing it. So there's a long list of exceptions that she went over. She also assured us at the RAC that all of the drivers on bus and rail currently do have communication devices. And the police chief also said all of the police, and I thank Rico for that, now carry communication devices for the deaf and the deaf and blind. I can't speak for the Metro Access drivers, but when she spoke to us, she spoke about bus, rail, and the police chief spoke about, Chief Pavlik spoke about the police having that. So it's something, again, when you talk to her, you might find out what they're doing as their standard and see if we want to apply it to our contractors.
We'll do.
This is Tino again. Apart from the question of mask, Christian, I sent you a month or so ago an article that appeared on the best way to ventilate a vehicle like a car or a van. The way to position open or half open windows so that the air within the van goes out without contaminating the driver or the passenger. You mentioned that you were going to bring that up with the companies that run the vans or the vehicles. Did they have any thoughts about the suggestions made about how to ventilate a vehicle while it's moving in terms of half open windows or open windows or whatever?
Yes, in fact, I did share your message from the message I received from you directly with each of the four service delivery providers, and they offered a lot of feedback. And right now what we're trying to do is slowly develop and perhaps incorporate a policy. We don't want to just let it be kind of open-ended. We're starting with the sedans because that actually, those vehicles have four windows that can be maneuvered versus really just one on the vans. There's a lot of discussion as to which windows to open and how much we're going to open them. They do believe that the window opening is a good answer, but there are different situations that we have to take into consideration. How cold it is, like on a day like today, that cold air going in the back to the customer is probably going to create as many complaints as it's going to resolve health concerns, if you will. So there are different situations. If you're on a highway, do you automatically close the windows or can you still keep them open? Which windows to open? So there was a lot of great information from all four of the contractors. And again, we're starting with the policies for the sedans, and then we're going to move it forward with the van as well. But yes, we have taken your information that you shared, and it has sparked a great conversation.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, because you want to be mindful, I understand ventilation, but of customers' health conditions, because when I was in New York in a Cessna ride, some of the drivers like to, on a winter day like this, you know, concerned about COVID, they're blasting the AC. And I'm like, this is inappropriate when it's 30 degrees outside. That's the last thing I want to deal with in a van. So, or have their window fully open or have windows, because theirs can just like be pulled open the way it is out. And I'm like, I'm freezing on this van and it's 30 degrees. I understand ventilation and I shouldn't have to be on a van and have my, you know, coat, hood, gloves and everything else on for that. So there needs to be some kind of balance, but you have to balance it against the health of the customer. And their own health and safety on board. So that's all I have to say about that. Any other feedback, Ms. Williams-Hall, as it relates to this issue that you can think of, you want to share any updates?
No, I don't have anything additional. It's business as usual with our COVID support. You know, we are still requiring masks. We're going to continue for the foreseeable future the use of direct trips and to encourage social distancing. Otherwise, there's nothing else to add.
All right. And then social distancing is using the other piece that we see in the messaging on the vans is taking the most rear seat, because we've already seen drivers already, at least some of the more forward seats, they've already kind of closed off to physically encourage the customer to choose, you know, one of the rear seats.
Oh, just because I haven't been on a vehicle lately, what does kind of close off look like?
Okay. It's similar to what I see in New York City, but let me describe this as it pertains to our Metro Access vehicles. So if it's on the new vans with those four seats, they usually have already the back one is open. The back two, most furthest, or two on right and left are open, but the others they're not available to sit in.
Are you saying they're folded up?
Yeah, they're folded up.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's the policy you have.
That's not really the policy.
This is what I see in terms of.
It makes sense. No, I appreciate it. It makes sense, but management should be dictating that, but I'm with you. No, that's the kind of information.
What I have observed over time since I ride the van a lot, and I put myself out there for saying, like, similar in New York, there is a bench that will seat two people directly behind the driver. So they automatically put that up, and they've restricted it to two people on the van only in New York City, a person in their PCR, whoever, but no more than two because of how their vehicle is configured. We're here, what I've seen on the new vans is particularly they've folded, folded up the seats that are close, they're closer to the driver right and left, and left the black ones open for choices to sit.
So what we want to be really clear, we are doing direct trips, and the only time you really should see multiple people on one of our vehicles is they are the same party. Mm-hmm. And we just don't want to send the message that those seats aren't available under those circumstances. So we can appreciate the drivers doing that, but they are available if there's a party more than, you know, two people that need to utilize those seats.
Okay. All right. I want to make that clear. I'm like, okay, they're doing this, and I guess they're encouraging it. That's why I wanted to bring that up in terms of social distancing. If there's no other questions, I guess we can go on to Mr. Schaefer. No other questions?
Barbara Millville, I have a comment.
Oh, go ahead, Barbara, as it relates to this topic, right?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I would like to add to the group of people who may not care to wear a mask for different reasons, the low vision population. What happens is when you put on the second mask, it's really doing a number on your peripheral vision directly in front of your feet and slightly forward. And I wanted to mention that one might be okay, but when, again, the second one is the issue. And the fact that these vans are a lot smaller than a bus or a rail car. And that would make it even more important to have the passenger wear a mask or two, because there's really no way for the air to circulate because it's kind of stuck in that little box of the van. So that's it.
Thank you for your feedback. And we'll take that under advisement. So next is going to be Mr. Schaefer, the web booking password change update. And with that, Mr. Schaefer, after you give your update, I do have a question for you.
This is Anu.
Yes.
Interrupt, but I do see Ms. Bush has her hand up at this point. I'm not sure if she has a question regarding the current topic or
something else. I have a comment about the seats being the two front seats with the four single seat vans.
Go ahead.
When you ride. A lot of the drivers, that's a habit that they have of putting the seats up. But I can't sit comfortably in the two back seats because of the way that the poles are underneath it does something to my legs. I don't have enough leg space and it's uncomfortable. So I always ask them to put one of the seats down. And I had one driver tell me that the company told them that they shouldn't do that. And I asked her, well, can you call into the company and ask them if it's okay if I sit there? Because otherwise, it's not comfortable for I'll have to sit sideways on one of the other seats.
So, Ms. William Hall, you want to address that?
So, I'm going to assume that when they called into the company, that they actually called our OCC, and the OCC provided them with guidance. So again, if a customer has a legitimate reason why they need to utilize that seat and they're not able to accommodate the social distancing that we're requesting, we will not deny that customer service. So even if that particular driver were to say, I'm uncomfortable transporting with a customer that close, that customer will be dispatched a vehicle and a driver that's willing to transport them. So it'll never be a circumstance where a customer will not be transported because they are uncomfortable in the rear seat. That's what we're asking for, to promote social distancing.
And let me just follow up with that, just in case the company that the driver was referring to was their own company, okay, interjecting a safety measure perhaps. And all four of the companies are on today. So service delivery, you can expect we're gonna have a talk about this. I, you know, again, it makes a lot of sense to have the seats up so that there's not even a debate or a discussion. But when a customer, not just Ms. Bush, it could be any customer, any customer who's not an AAC member, says that's the seat they need, that is our business, we're in the business of accommodation, that's the seat they sit in. So service delivery, let's get ready. If you know you're the company that said that, or if that's been your practice, Let's be ready to talk tomorrow. But no, I'm glad to hear this. I'm glad Paul brought this up. And Ms. Bush, you know, I didn't hear from you on that one, and that's cool. But you know, whenever you have one of these situations,
please
feel free to give me a call.
Because the driver actually, I waited for them to call in, and so that I would be able to sit in that seat. And they called.
So you eventually did sit in the seat.
Oh, yes.
One last piece I'll bring up before going to Mr. Schaefer. Sometimes I have seen where I guess they see how many people is going to be on board. And when they put the seats up, I do sit in the back. I tend to favor to want to sit in the back most right seat on a four seat van, one of the new vehicles, mm-hmm, versus on the left side. And I, you know, they folded that up, which I find strange because, you know, it's understandable you do the two forward seats, but the two most further back, left and right, that should be an option. It's like they put the one in the left to be, you know, in the corner. Maybe they think it's more distance. I don't know. I don't have a measuring tape, but I'm just saying this is my observations over time.
Yeah,
you have that discussion.
I don't have a problem. I've had that case before when I've ridden, and I just tell them which seat I want to ride in.
Right.
But that one time was the only time that the driver said that the company recommended that they not use those seats.
That almost to me sounds like the company they work for less than the OCC. But we're gonna figure it out. And again, okay, I'm glad you still got in your seat. And I just want to make sure
I get mine every time.
I know that's right. I just want to make sure that it doesn't take, you know, a strong person like Darnese Bush to be accommodated. I think that's we need to understand that accommodation is our business. And so I just want to make sure the companies that we're not so focused on one thing that we then end up violating or looking like we're not adhering to the spirit of the law.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Schaefer, you're up next. And then I have a question that for you with your topic.
So on the web booking update, from my point of view, it's gone pretty smoothly. There have been inquiries and I've gotten maybe two or three a week over this time. About half of them seem to be email mismatches that people don't realize that they have to use the same emails when they first signed up. But I refer them to Elledge and they've been taking care of these people. Is there anyone from Elledge on the line as to what your experience has been?
I see Antoine here.
Antoine?
He's muted.
Oh.
Yes, I am here.
Oh, hi, Antoine.
Hey.
We had a question for you from Mr. Okay. Schaefer. Go ahead, Mr. Schaefer.
Yeah, I said that I just had a few inquiries, not really complaints, but problems registering on the web booking. What's been Elledge's experience and the number of issues you've had to handle?
We've been getting maybe like, it was a lot today, but because it was due today, but maybe 10 to 15 people a day that we help either enroll or reset their password.
Okay, and I think about half of those I refer to you, so it sounds about right.
Uh-huh.
That seems to me like a very small number of people considering the number of customers we have. So I think we can call it a success so far.
Now, Mr. Schaefer, my question to you is, so with this, with the web booking going, is this going to eventually apply to the EasyPay side of things, which still uses the same thing in terms of your Metro Access ID and then your two-digit year? Is that going to eventually roll over into that site since it involves money and it involves, you know, the reason you did this piece first is security. Will this also eventually apply to the EasyPay site also?
I'm sorry, I can't answer that. I don't know what the issues are there. I thought EasyPay, you had to have a unique password, but I could be
wrong. No, right now I can still use my, because my presumption is when I used right now I can use this the same old way of putting my Metro Access ID and my username and password. It has not brought up for me to change it, or is it, when this happened, was it supposed to also change the EasyPay site since both are, well, I know they're separate sites, but right now it did not, because I'm able to type it. For some reason, it didn't translate over.
No, it was not designed to affect EasyPay, but as to whether that should be the next one, you know, I defer to Terri-Ann and.
Oh, okay. That was okay. So, Ms. Williams Hall, that'll be my next question since y'all, you know, are doing it with this first.
So, I mean, that seems like a logical follow-on, but to Dave's point, that is David's point. That was not a part of this iteration here. So, Allison, if you could just capture that request, we can look at building that out and seeing if there are any concerns with regard to moving that way. We can see if it's available.
Okay, it's just only because now if you're concerned about changing passwords because of, you know, issues in safety, because this site obviously is dealing with people's, you know, and putting money into it.
Right.
So it's two separate applications altogether.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there would have to be some kind of API to allow those to integrate. They're two separate applications right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
With that, is there any other questions from any other committee members or the public as it relates to this topic?
Chair Samuelford, this is Anil. I see Ms. Bush has her hand up and Vanessa had her hand up before that. So Vanessa, go ahead and make
it. So we haven't heard from you, Vanessa, so you go first and then Ms. Bush.
Okay, my question, you're talking about the new generation vans.
That topic we already finished. We were talking, we've now gotten down to the web booking password change update from Mr. Schaefer. That's the topic.
I'll save my question till the end because it's regarding sedans.
Okay, so what I'll do is I'll put you, did you want to put you in public comment period?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then I'll add your name to public comment period.
Thank you.
Okay, so going back to Ms. Bush. Someone unmute her?
I just have a statement.
Okay, go ahead.
The statement is that I hope that they don't change the thing for the money in terms of your birth date, and because organizations, nonprofits put money into people's account and they're used to using a birth date. Places like the ARC or Department on Disability Services that provide services for people to travel. And they use the birth date to put money into those people's accounts for them so that they can travel. So I think it would be more difficult on those people.
That issue came up with the web booking password change because some of them also book for their clients, but I have not heard any complaints about that. And I think if they have to keep a track of people's birth date, they can keep track of people's passwords.
Okay.
That's my personal point of view. Okay. You would argue it with...
I don't really want to argue it, but a lot of people have developmental disabilities, cognitive disabilities, and it's easier for people to remember their birth date. And sometimes a person's case manager or whatever does the booking for them. They don't necessarily do the scheduling. They transfer money into those people's accounts so that they'll be able to have access to transportation. So I don't know. I'm just making a statement.
I know this has come up and I've been saying at least for some of the, because I received a call from a particular human service agency and I said, I'm open to it. If they're gonna take responsibility and they understand the vulnerabilities, you know, who am I to debate that? But it hasn't been made as a policy that you absolutely can do it. But I've given at least one person on my team who was involved in this conversation my certain tacit approval that, hey, if an organization is working with a number of individuals, you know, a group home, for example, with 10 clients, and they're not trying to remember 10 unique passwords and want to stick with the birthday, I found no objection to it. But there are other people who are going to have input into any type of exception like that. But I just want you to know this has come up. I've talked to at least one group and I've already expressed I don't have a problem with it. But again, it's not totally my decision at the end of the day.
Okay.
Chair Summerford, this is Anu.
Yes.
Debbie Fisher has her hand up. Debbie, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Just so you know, I actually have a meeting with the Montgomery County Provider Group to discuss all these issues the beginning of April. So I can ask, these are the intellectual and developmental disability providers. So I can ask them if this is a big challenge for them, since many of them at the moment are not using Metro Access because they're not going to their day programs. It may not actually be something that they're focusing on at the moment. But as they start to come back online, some of these issues may arise. So I can, when I talk in general about this, we'll see what kind of feedback I get.
Thank you.
Welcome.
All right. So if there's no other comments as it relates to web booking, password change update, or what I mentioned, we're going to go back to Mr. Blake on the OIG special report that was talked about at the AAC.
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
Well, I have a follow-up on Deborah's comment.
Oh, okay.
There are a lot of people that aren't using Metro Access right now and may not have tried to book anything and may not be aware of the fact that they had to change their password. And if they suddenly start using it in September, October, November, how will that work?
Okay, I will look to Mr. Blake or Ms. Williams-Halls to answer that question.
Sure, David certainly could add to it if I miss anything. But when they attempt to log in, that password that they used before is no longer going to be accepted, and they're going to be directed to the steps to reset their password based on the new naming convention requirements.
So then there is no time limit. It's just the next time they log in, they will have to change their password.
Yes, we were saying that as of 3/15, these are the new requirements. So anybody who hadn't done it before that time, know that after that time is non-negotiable, you will have to reset your password.
Super, thank you.
Okay, you're very welcome.
Thank you. All right, now we can go to Mr. Blake for the OIG report, which we talked about at the AAC meeting, and there were some questions about it, so I added it to our agenda.
Yeah, so in that case, why don't we go to the questions, because I've kind of given my update, but why don't we go to the questions and we'll take it from there.
Okay, so committee members and our public members who were at the AAC meeting, there was an OIG report made, and some people had some questions, and I said I will put it on the subcommittee meeting to be brought up again. But Mr. Blake, maybe you can kind of give a quick refresher as to what this is, so people have perspective who have not were not at the AAC meeting and heard about it yet.
Okay, so that's fair. So the WMATA Office of Inspector General, following up on a customer's complaint about long ride times and circuitous routing, issued a report following its investigation and issued 5 recommendations, all of which we agreed to, although we put some caveats in them. One recommendation was to change the name of our most public facing metric of on-time performance. So now if you look at your report, it's now called on-time pickup performance to give more clarity as to what Metro Access is talking about when they say on-time performance. The other is they want us to create a new public facing metric that relates to onboard time. You know, that's the, well, we've talked about the fixed route equivalent time that David talked about earlier. Well, now that's going to become a new public facing metric. We've always tracked it, but more so on a case by case basis, because for the longest time, as some of the longtime riders have said, you know, they've been riding 20 years and never heard of fixed route equivalency until I came along. And the fact of the matter is, for most of the years of Metro Access, the goal was to get you to and from your pickup location as quick as possible. Well, now the goal with Metro Access is to have Metro Access replicate public transportation, a shared ride, fixed route equivalent service. And so they want that to become a new public facing metric. And I reported that we're going to do that beginning July 1st, although I shared data with you going back as far as September 2019. And so that's going to be a new metric that's 90% just like the on-time performance public-facing metric is, 90%. The other thing, they wanted us to pursue getting a real-time traffic solution, a real-time traffic system for Metro Access. That too, we agreed with, but with the caveat that we believe in the technology. We're going to use the technology once we are completed with this solicitation, if the technology of the proposed successful vendor proves that it does work. And that's what the challenge we had before. We had real-time traffic. We made the investment in real-time traffic, but as many of you have reported and experienced, and then staff went out and actually rode with you, we found that it wasn't working quite right. So we took it down, and we're currently and have been using turn-by-turn directions. So we're going to be, we're in the middle of a solicitation. Once the solicitation is complete, if we have a successful vendor, we're going to test their product, and we'll see by October if that product meets our needs. If it does, great. If it doesn't, then we're going to start the process over again. And then they also wanted us to continue to communicate with the AAC and the disability community at large on our efforts to secure a real-time traffic solution. And then the fifth one, demonstrate regular monitoring of trips. And again, we agree with that because we've been monitoring these trips. But, and I shared with you again data going back to September 19. So we agree with the report, but I think the presentation, and not I think, as I mentioned during the AAC meeting, the purpose of my presentation was to, you know, summarize the OIG report, but also to remind folks, in case they read it differently, that the OIG report does not change the commitment of Metro Access to be an efficient shared ride public transit service when we do return to shared rides, which means if the trip from your home to downtown DC takes 1 hour and 45 minutes on bus and rail, you should expect to be on a van for 1 hour and 45 minutes. Doesn't mean you will be, but you should expect it. You shouldn't expect to be on the van 1 hour and 46 minutes, because then we would be wrong and we would have to figure out why we were wrong and fix that. Regardless of how long your trip takes, you should expect to share the ride. Doesn't mean you always will be, but you should expect that during the course of your ride, there'll either be a passenger on the vehicle, or we would pick a passenger up during your trip to your destination. So I wanted to just summarize the report, say we agree with the recommendations of the report. We're moving forward with all of the recommendations, but didn't want anyone in the committee or the community at large to read the report, at least the headlines. If you read the report, I don't think you would get that, but if you just read the headlines, you may have mistaken that Metro Access goal is to get you from one location to another as fast as possible. And that's not our goal going forward.
So what I'm hearing from you, Mr. Blake, is in respect to the first two recommendations, it is somewhat our expectation that this monthly Metro Access Subcommittee performance report, which I see on my other screen, those two reflected changes in categories and report outs I should see on the July report,
on the August report, because it's starting, the official reporting begins July 1st. So your first official report will come, well, we don't have a meeting in August, but it will come after July. However, as I shared on March 1st during the AAC meeting, we're going to keep sharing with you our compliance with the FRE metric performance numbers all the way through the end of this fiscal year.
Okay. Any questions as it relates to this from committee members?
There's someone forward. Phil Posner has his hand up.
Go ahead, Ms. Dr. Posner.
This is Phil Posner for the interpreters. This is an issue we've
just talked about. Second, Dr. Posner. I don't want to say Dr. Phil.
Someone else has a copyright on that. And I can't use it.
You're right. Yeah, you can't use it.
Anyway, we've discussed something like this for a while, and getting back to Metro Access is parallel to the fixed route. And fixed route basically has their on-time promise for rush hour for the rail. And I've asked in the past, I know we have a reward for being late for being picked up, but there's no reward for the driver, for the rider, who's on the bus for longer than the calculated time. And I know we can't put a time down because there are going to be some rides, like from Prince George's County to Dulles Airport, they're going to take 3 hours. But we might do a percentage that if the ride is 20% longer or 30% longer or 50% longer than the parallel fixed route ride, that there may be some sort of a discount or a free ride or whatever. It's something that I think we ought to talk about and think about, because I think that's what Congressman Connolly brought to the Inspector General when his constituent complained about too much time on the van. And I know it's difficult, but I'd like to bring it up and think we might want to talk about that.
that there is some upper limit and that there might be not, we don't want you to ever do it again, but yeah, you get a free ride. So that's my comment on that. And while we're talking about fares, I think I'd also like at some point to get back to talking about flat fares again, because of all the changes in routes and times and things that are going on and the numbers that we're getting as to what percentage of the riders are paying lowest fare, what percentage is paying highest fare, and what the average fare is, whether it would be easier to just do average fare. And that way we wouldn't have complaints from riders who get different fares going and coming and things like that. So those are my comments, and you know, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any other comments as it relates to the OIG report that Mr. Blake has summarized?
Chair Samaford, this is Anu. I do not see anyone else's hand up at this point.
Okay.
Now, before you go on, Mr. Chairman, I know I'm probably gonna regret this, but if I recall at the meeting, you added this because Ms. Rush had some questions. Now, I don't know if they've been answered, but does she wanna take another swipe at me? Well, I'm here to try to answer the question if I can. So I didn't wanna.
So, Ms. Rush, are you on the call?
Yes, I'm here. It's the same circle. Nothing's going to change. It should basically be a flat rate, but I've been on the committee a long time, and it is not a flat rate. And the time going, time coming, and how they calculate the fare, it's not going to change. I mean, now it's the fastest route is almost the bus. It's not the rail. It's mostly the bus. And it really should be a flat rate because of all the changes and what it does to calculate it. You know, walking to the bus stop, how long you're on the bus, how long you wait for the bus. Until you experience it, you nobody's getting it. So it hasn't changed. It's not going to change, and it is, you know, that's what it is because.
Okay, that's I think that's fair. Yeah, and I think I respect that, and I hear from both you and Dr. Phil advocacy for a flat fare. As I always say, advocate. Being transparent, I will tell you I'm not necessarily for it or against it. You're right. There's so many changes, and when we get back to what is normal, what would be the best way to do this flat fare? Sounds good. I mean, you're not going to necessarily get an argument from me, but what I like to think is that we've got some things in store with our alternatives. And as I've been talking about, I like to give the discounts to the alternatives as an incentive. And that's kind of where my energy, let me just say, in internal advocacy has been. But if the vice chair of this committee, the chair of the full committee, and others believe in advocating for a flat fare, I think, as you've done on other things, you certainly have that prerogative to do so.
Okay, because, you know, one station's down, 19 stations are down, they're doing upgrading, they're fixing the platforms, this bus route is down, that bus route is down. After you finish all that, it should be a flat rate because there's so many differences, and every day there is something different, and there's no way that the trip planner can plan for that kind of revisions and changes every day.
I hear you loud and clear. I thought you were going to say after all those changes, it should be free. I thought that's where you were about to go. But I'm not going to say that.
I think everybody's got to get their pay for what they do. But
I hear you. And you're not going to get a debate from me again on it. I'm just being transparent. That's not really where I've been focused lately. But I think as a committee, you guys and ladies, you as a team, if you feel that's your avenue of advocacy, let's face it, a flat fare certainly wouldn't make David Seidenhoff's life easy. You heard what he was going through. So you're not going to get an argument, I'm sure, from the OCC. You may get a tiny bit one in terms of just rebuttal for me, but I don't think that's neither here nor there. I think you guys should look at it and decide on your next stage of advocacy.
Yeah, because it's just like when you go buy your gas, every day it goes up, then it goes down, then it goes up. How can you do a budget if you don't have anything to budget, nothing stable to budget with?
I'm with you.
All right, thank you for your comments. So with that now, if there's no other questions, I was going to go into public comment period. And new, is there anyone do we have already for public comment or who needs or wants to be on public comment?
Public comment, let me make a motion that we add the discussion of flat fare to our work plan for Metro Access. That way it'll be on the work plan and we can talk about it as the year moves forward.
Oh, there's no motion need to be doing. I will stick it in as a topic for discussion at a meeting. That's not an issue. But if we already have it here in the minutes, it will go into the work plan because, as I said, what I do every year to discuss it, it is a breathing and living document, always amenable to change based on the needs that are identified by the committee members.
This is good. I second the motion.
The motion is fine.
I want to be on public comment. This is Denise Rush.
Okay. So we have a motion before us. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I want to put the motion to question. All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions, the motion carries to add this to the work plan as requested by the subcommittee. Thank you. So next we got public comment. Anu, is there anyone up first that you already have that is from the public? Before I have at least two AAC members who need to speak, but if there's another public member that you have that is already on the list, please let me know now so that person can speak.
Sure, Simon Ford, this is Anu. Yes, we do have a member of the public, Ansel Torres, followed by two members, which you all already know, Vanessa Coles and Ms. Rush.
Thank you. Oh, you're already ahead of me. Thank you. All right. So we already hear that speaking order. So Ansel Torres first, Vanessa, and then Ms. Rush. So, did you have something to say, Mr. Schaefer? Oh, no. Okay. Mr. Torres, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're up for public comment.
Okay. I have a few issues I just want to mention here. Mr. Blake and Ms. Williams Hall already know about this, but I just want to put this on the record. This has to do with choking seat belts on some of the older buses of Metro Access. Basically what's happening, and I believe a lot of other disabled people have been experiencing this, I believe because of a failure in procurement, we have ended up with vehicles with all different types of malfunctions. And for me, the biggest one of them has been the seatbelt issue. I've gotten into several fights with drivers. Some drivers don't care if you put on the shoulder belt, because essentially because it was choking me, I would basically put the shoulder strap behind me and just use this, the lap belt. That was okay with some drivers, it wasn't okay with others. And we got into to you know, quiet an exchange. And eventually the call supervisor ended up getting involved with it. And it never really resolved itself. Finally, I brought it up earlier on this year. And it appeared, maybe I was wrong, but it appeared that Ms. Williams Hall, when I explained it to her, was hearing about it for the first time. And I believe sometimes the way Mr. Blake phrases the issue when it deals with me has, it makes it seem as though, well, because of my particular body type, I am experiencing the problem. I could bring you other individuals who are much shorter than me, actually my wife, she is 5'3", and the seat she sits in, the seatbelt also chokes her as well. Normal seatbelts, as far as I know, don't choke you when you're just sitting there. These seatbelts that I'm talking about on the Metro Access van do. And in the middle of the trip, I often have to take the seatbelt off and put it back on in order to recalibrate it and give me some breathing room. The last driver I worked with, he gave me an extension. The extension does nothing because all the seatbelt does is just adjust, is readjust itself. And it continues to constrict you like, you know, like an anaconda kind of choking. This problem does not exist on the latest Metro Access vans. I believe the 5900 series and the ones that come after that. So the people who procure these things, they certainly know the right seatbelt to get because we have an example of it already in service. And I believe that it should be, or maybe a motion could be passed that the executives at WMATA be asked to ride these vehicles when they are procured and let us know how much they like it. Because my sense is that there are folks sitting at WMATA in their comfortable seating, you know, putting together policy for us who are confronted with these errors, failures in procurement. And they're saying, oh, no, that's very good for you. Well, they can say it's good for you because, you know, it's not their ox being gored. Because I guarantee you, if they were going to work every day and had to be choked by a seatbelt, they wouldn't like it too much. And trust me, it would have been fixed a heck of a lot a long time ago. We wouldn't have to be talking, but it would have probably happened on the first van, but not the second. And these are the kinds of I mean, this is just one example of procurement failures that we've had to deal with. So that's my issue, that's my statement on the seatbelt. Now, just a follow-up, this has to do with the 10-minute notification just before your trip arrived. I know that was being tested. I never heard what happened with that test. Did it fail completely? Is it no longer going to be tried? And so I just wanted to ask a question about that, find out what's happening there. And I understand that there are, I must have skipped over this one. I understand that there are several vehicles that are going to be procured, whether it's more sedans and vans and so on and so forth. I need to get an understanding of what's happening with that. Are we essentially simply ordering more of the same? Is there another type of sedan that's going to be procured? And in terms of these, I guess they are minivans, maybe SUV types. Is that what we're talking about? Because it just seems to be a little bit confusing in terms of the amount of vehicles that seem to be coming down the pike all of a sudden. I'm not sure what's bringing that about. Since we have such low ridership right now. So anyway, if I can get an explanation of some of those things, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to let Mr. Blake, and between him and Ms. Williams Hall, tag team those answers.
Yeah, so let's start with what I call the easier ones first, the vehicle purchases. These purchases are not all of a sudden. What's different now is that we're getting different types of vehicles. Metro Access is purchasing vehicles every year. And once we get a model, and for example, the Ford Transit that came down the pike, they're new purchases being done every year. It's just not as, if you want to say, of interest, because it was just the same thing. But now we've added sedans. So there's been a little more attention to this. And I've got to defend my colleagues in procurement in the sense that they're purchasing what, in the case of Access vans, especially when it comes to the Ford Transit vans, they purchase what the Metro Access management at the time requested. I mean, that's just the fact. So we're working as a team. Again, you all know that there was one of the reasons. So let's just stick with this. One of the reasons I didn't just go ahead and purchase the Chevy Malibus, because as y'all know, let's step back for a minute. I have a belief that long before I became in charge of Access, and therefore, you know, a role with Metro Access, I looked at data and I saw data that showed there were hundreds of customers taking thousands of trips each year requesting a sedan. Sedan only, sedan only, sedan only. Management at the time, they didn't, and it wasn't about the Toyota Camry or Honda Accord or this or that. They wanted off the vans. Management at the time said, our practice and our belief is not to give customer vehicle preference. You get new management says, we're willing to try the concept of customer preference. If I see that there are hundreds of customers taking thousands of trips and they're asking consistently until they finally get the message that management wasn't going to adhere to those specific requests, they stop. I'm saying there's a market there. And those customers, again, weren't asking a specific type of vehicle. They just wanted a sedan. Will any sedan accommodate 100% of Metro Access customers? No. But because of the experience, which I was sitting on the outside looking in, but I saw the experience and the result of the Ford Transit purchase, I said to myself, I can go down that line, satisfy hundreds of customers, go ahead and purchase these Chevy Malibu hybrids, save money, life goes on. Won't be able to accommodate 100% of the customers, but we can address a lot of customers. But instead, what I saw from the Ford Transit experience, the lack of input from the AAC and the disability community at large, I said, let's open this up. I want to hear from you all, and I'll put aside my easy preference from a procurement standpoint and get feedback from the community. I just think it's very unfortunate that goodwill and effort turned into a belief that there was a decision being made by the AAC. And therefore, if you didn't get exactly what you expressed to management, you were somehow disrespected, not listened to, what have you. That was never my intention. And it's unfortunate that it turned into that. But that wasn't the purpose of it. The purpose was to give me and the team a greater visibility, if you will, into what a larger group of customers would want. We can't find anything that's 100% for everybody, but instead of just going and grab these Chevy Malibus, let me hear the specs. So yes, we did purchase 175. I don't know exactly how many have arrived yet, but not all of them have arrived. We are replacing the Ford Transits as well as the older vehicles. And we're replacing them now instead of one type of vehicle, a variety. So it's not about the ridership. It's not about the timing and how few We have a regular schedule in our fleet plan in terms of how we plan our fleet. We're purchasing vehicles. So there are going to be sedans, and yes, we're going to purchase more sedans. And the new sedan purchase, my number one goal is one of my goals from the last one, is to separate the purchase of the vehicles from the services of the upfit. That's my big goal. But I will tell you this, at this point in time, it looks like what we're going to do, though, keep everything fair and transparent. We're going to use the exact same final technical specifications, but separate the two and let's see how that plays out. That's later down the line, later this year. The minivans, the intention with the minivans, because those are going to have to be modified, which is more like a traditional Metro Access purchase, what we're going to do is use the recommendations that the AAC gave us for the van, the next generation van. We're going to use those specifications and apply them to any van or minivan type of vehicle going forward that requires modification. So that's a brief on that end of it. So yes, we're buying vehicles, but we're always buying vehicles. The only difference now is that we're buying different types of vehicles. So it's a little more newsworthy, for the lack of a better word. Now, and back to your particular situation, and I'm not trying to make it about you, but again, we're in the accommodation business. It's a lot easier for me to deal with when it comes to a circumstance like this. I've heard about the seatbelt, but that hasn't been a big thing I've heard. That's why I have to treat a lot of these situations on the individual by individual basis. And let me just say, Mr. Torres, and this is for everybody. You know, I made this mistake back at MTA. I used to give customers my cell phone numbers and they would call me all the time and whatnot. I said I wasn't gonna do that when I came over here. Well, it's just my nature. Now, my cell phone is on the website and I get calls, rather I'm having dinner with my mom in Miami, Florida, I'm in Vegas trying to win millions of dollars, or I'm in New Orleans celebrating Mardi Gras. I'm getting calls from customers all the time. And you know what I do? I usually answer the phone. What I'm saying to you, Mr. Torres, I understand you are probably speaking for other customers as well as yourself. I'm not denying that. My point is, it's a lot easier for me to deal with situations that relate to accommodation on an individual case-by-case basis, because the choking, as you're experiencing, is different for another customer. It's not all the same. So when it gets down to that level, yes, we're going to, as I promised you on the email on Saturday, we're going to look at both the size of the interior of the sedans we purchased versus their older model siblings. We're going to look at the location of the seatbelts on the vans. But we're dealing with accommodation on a case-by-case basis, because that's the best way for me to address a particular individual, because your complaint about the van is not always the same as somebody else's complaint. But I heard the complaints, I heard the variety of complaints. Metro spent a lot of money making changes following advice from the AAC on those for transit vans. We spent a lot of money. We took all your recommendations. These were a lot of meetings that went into all of this. But because of the decision not to include the AAC up front on the purchase of those transits, I decided to include the AAC up front on the purchase of the sedans. All I can say is going forward, we're going to try to bring this back again. Y'all know I cut it off. I just said, hey, those days are done. We're not bringing it. We're not going to go through this no more. That was probably a little emotional, reflexive. But all I can say, you know, it's like my mama said, if you keep doing the same thing and expecting different results, there's a problem there. Going forward, if your attitude, I'm not saying you, Mr. Torres, I'm just talking to anybody. If your attitude is, we're going to tell Metro what we want on a van, on a website, on this or that, And unless Metro gives me every single thing I want, I'm going to feel disrespected and I'm going to complain. Well, you have a right to complain, but if you go into this process expecting every single thing you recommend, that's a recipe to be disappointed. I don't want to disappoint you. Metro doesn't want to disappoint you, but there are policies and procedures that we have to follow. So we're going to work together in general with the seat belts in the vans as we still have them. And we're going to work together very specifically on your accommodation in terms of riding our vehicles. So I hope I answered that and all that, you know, long-winded diatribe. Several different vehicles are coming. The AAC has already advised us on specifications for sedans. Most of them we're going to accept. There's one you probably won't, but let's see what the process plays out when we make this adjustment. When it comes to the minivans, again, the AAC and the disability community has already given us advice on the specifications, and we're going to move forward with those as well. And I'm going to show you proof, just like with what we did with the vans, I'm going to show you proof that we've incorporated the feedback of the AAC and the disability community.
So we got 10 minutes, 11 minutes left, and there are four other members that want to speak.
Can I just say something real quick? It'll be very, very brief.
Because we got four other people that want to speak.
I hear you. Mr. Blake, I do appreciate your efforts. Okay? You are probably one of the hardest working administrators in this business that I know. Okay? And that's... That is not going unnoticed. But it's very simple. If the stuff was working for us, not just me, for us, you wouldn't hear a peep. You probably wouldn't even need to show us the vehicle. If we could trust Metro to provide us with a door that opens enough to accommodate people with physical disabilities that may not be able to get into a vehicle, you wouldn't have a debate. I don't understand why that is so hard for WMATA to understand that having that requirement that the AAC asked for, I don't understand how in the middle of a negotiation you can simply strip something that we asked you for that would be beneficial to us, not beneficial to you, but beneficial to us who have to use the service. I don't understand how that can be stripped out without saying, folks, look, you asked for this, but we're going to strip it out. Be upfront about it. And maybe there's a very good explanation for it. And if it makes a lot of sense, I guess, you know, we would have to accept it. But when it is done under the cover of darkness, we don't find out until, you know, several months later when the deed is done. That feels like a stab in the back, especially if it's accommodation that will accommodate more disabled people. Hey, I don't need a door with a 90-degree opening in the back. I don't need it at all. I can get in just fine, but it's not just me that I'm talking about. And that's my point. All right, I'll stop there, thanks.
All right, thank you. I do want to get to some of the four people. Vanessa, and followed by Denise Oops. Rush.
Okay, my question has been answered, thank you.
Okay, next is Denise Rush, followed by Tino, and then finally Darnese Bush. Go ahead, Denise.
Okay, this is Denise Rush. The past couple of months, I've been very quiet, just listening. Like I started on the back row, sitting with Christian Kemp, listening to the meetings before I applied to get on the board. But when you're quiet and you're listening, you hear a lot of things. First, I want to thank the presentation of the slides for Mr. Blake did last month. That was the best presentation with slides that I have ever heard since I've been on the board. It said slide number one and described it. Slide number two and described it in detail. The people who are blind on the committee have become compliant. We just know about it. or we make ourselves comfortable. But a person who is newly blind, who has not attended the meetings, would not understand half of the slide presentations. So, Mr. Blake, I want to thank you for that. Because, like today, we did have a presentation, and the man was reading, but they will say, next slide. Well, when I want to discuss it later on, I don't know what next slide was or last slide, or let's go back to the first slide. But slide number one, I'll remember that I have a question about slide number one or slide number two. And the people who can see it, until you walk in someone's shoes, you don't understand it. Pat, myself, and the people who are visually impaired, blind, we've listened to those slides for a long time, and we're just sitting there, and because I eat, sleep, and drink Metro Access, I find out what the slide was. But a lot of people who are just coming in who have a visual disability don't understand what they're talking about. We're just sitting there. And what has happened is we've been on the committee for so long, we've just accepted it. We don't know that there's two people in the picture. We don't know if there's two vehicles, if they're comparing stuff. We don't know nothing. And now we need to step up and present like we should present. But I tell you what, if we didn't have an interpreter for someone who could not hear, RICO would shut the meeting down. They serve what we accept. So, you know, I've accepted it, and the blind community has accepted it. But we wouldn't do that. RICO is not having it. There's not going to be no meeting, and there's nobody there telling what's going on. So because we've accepted it for many, many years, that's what we've gotten. And we've got to step it up and consider everyone's disability. No matter what it is, if it's visual, if you can't hear, Doris, you know Doris has stopped the meeting. I can't hear. And we got to get something so she can hear. So let's be considerate of everybody's disability. We are working together to make it easier for the disabled community.
Thank you. I need four more minutes. I want to get in. Tina, please make it quick, and then I want to get Darnese, and that will be it.
I just want to add one thing. The article I talked about regarding ventilation, I will send it to Anu so it could be attached to the minutes. But the last thing, we're running out of time, but we haven't really thanked David Schaefer, whose last meeting it is today. And I haven't worked with David as long as many of you. But David, I want to thank you for all that you've done. Some things you couldn't do, and that's all. But I really appreciate your work, and good luck to you. And I hope you can carry on the fight in whatever you do in the future. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, David.
Count on the fight.
All right. And last person is Darnese Bush. It's 5:57. Go ahead, Darnese.
Mine is really a statement, and it's regarding the seat belts. You could ask for a shoulder harness waiver or a seat belt waiver. And I've had my doctor and Miss Allison told me to process a shoulder harness waiver. And I did, and I don't have too many problems, except for sometimes they forget to put it in my record. But if they do, they can always call and find out that it's in there. And that way I'm always allowed to put the shoulder harness behind me. So maybe that'll help you, Mr. Torres.
Paul, this is Pat Shin. I have a quick
Go ahead.
Thank you.
One question that Ansel asked Mr. Blake that I don't think he answered was the 10-minute early warning for vehicles.
Oh, you're right. I apologize.
Because
yeah. Phil Paul could talk about it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Mr. Blake.
Okay, real quick. Yes, I'm sorry. I did forget about that. Yes, we did test it out on a pilot number of customers. The technology has been very sporadic from the beginning. We were told it was very easy and everybody's doing it, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It proved not to be as wonderful. And believe me, I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I went all over the region to meetings, especially meetings involving the blind community about this new technology, and everybody was just so looking forward to it. So I kind of had egg on my face. It's still in use for the pilot customers, but we've decided at this point it's not in the best interest of the service to roll it out system wide.
Chair Paul, this is Mary Beth Morgan, one of the interpreters. Unfortunately, we have arrived at 6 o'clock.
Okay, I see 5:59. Okay, so with that, I'm going to make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks,
so,
David.
Can I get a motion? Hey, so David. Moved.
So moved.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. David.
Oh, you're welcome.
Be safe and good luck.
On the floor, I need to leave the meeting. Cancel button. Leave the meeting button.
Okay, Anu. Oops, I can't hear you.